So at 1:30, we call this meeting to order, 1:34, the Labor and Commerce meeting. Today we're going to hear two bills, SB 252, which is a bill involving insurance for portable electronics, not in a contract. And then we will also hear SB 55, which is an act relating to actions by insurers based on credit history or insurance scores. Today with us we have Senator Olson, Senator Michikian, myself, Senator Dunleavy, and we are expected shortly Senator Ellis and Senator Stedman to join us as well. So at this point, I would ask if there's a motion to adopt CS 28LS0461/N. Senator Michikian.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopts Senate Bill 5228-LS-0461N.
And I object for discussion. At this point, would Senator Coghill with Kara Noor, please come forward, state your name for the record, and please give your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for hearing Senate Bill 52. Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to give you the broad overview, and the young lady, Ms. Noor, is going to actually give you some of the details in it. The big part is in the insurance world, you have kind of the regular property insurance issues, and then on the other end you have service contracts, which are not insurance. In this, you're going to have a segment that is a much more nimble insurance for these portable electronic products. And this will establish a good rule, I think, that Alaska could use for best practices. And I'm carrying it at request. I think it's a good thing to do for Alaska. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it. So on that positive note, Mr. Chairman, what I'm going to do is ask Ms. Kari Noor if she will not only present it before you. I have another meeting I got to run off to. She's very capable. This will be her first bill, so it's probably going to be a little nervous for her, but she has done a good job of understanding both the detail and the substance. So I will leave it to her, Mr. Chairman, unless you have a question for me.
Thank you. Any questions for Senator Coghill? Seeing none, thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Please state your name for the record. And
For the record, my name is Kari Noor. I'm intern to Senator Coghill.
You can pull that closer if you wish.
Okay, so what SB 52 seeks to do is to bring structure to a market that currently isn't there. We live in an age where everyone has some sort of portable electronic device. Many of us have more than one. And so what this bill seeks to do is to protect the consumers from being taken advantage of. So if, for example, if your laptop is stolen out of your home or out of your car, your homeowner's insurance won't necessarily cover that, cover the theft of that portable electronic device. And so, Mr. Chair, if you would like, I can go section by section of this sectional analysis for the committee.
Why don't you, if you can do that in a semi-expeditious manner.
Okay.
Hit the major spots, and then we'll come back and ask questions.
Okay. So one of the main points of this bill is that we're adding portable electronics insurance to the list of insurances that are not included under service contracts. We also added a subsection to clarify in Section 2 that portable electronics insurance, portable electronics manufacturers' warranties and extended warranties do not apply under Title 21. And then the main change was in Section 4, where we added new subsection 8, which allows the Director of Insurance to issue portable electronics limited producer licenses to a vendor that sells or offers portable electronics insurance. And then the license covers the vendor and the employees for all locations in the state where they sell the products, and the employees do not have to be licensed as long as they are not compensated based on the sale of insurance. And then the vendor has a training program, and the vendor maintains a registry. So something important to note is that the employees who will be selling this insurance will not be compensated in any form for the number of policies that they sell.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Machicki?
So, Kara?
Kari.
Kari. So essentially what that says is ACS or Radio Shack has the license for selling the insurance, and any employee, as long as they're not directly compensated or given some kind of special consideration, they can just sell under the license of the holder, if you will.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Please continue.
Okay, so Section 5 of the bill, it defines what portable electronics insurance will do, and it also lists all the required materials that must be presented to the consumer in writing, which means the consumer will know exactly what they're getting for what they're paying for. And it also defines the procedure in which the terms of the insurance can be modified and defines the termination procedures for portable electronics insurance. It also lists the types of devices that will be covered under the portable electronics insurance. And then Section 6 is the effective date. And the effective date, the bill will go into effect January 1, 2014. And this is because the Division of Insurance is currently undergoing a software update. And this is to prevent a fiscal impact of the bill.
Questions of the committee members for Ms. Knorr?
Just a comment goes to show that government isn't static with all of the new devices we use, and we would be the 44th state, I believe, to adopt this legislation. So it's timely.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Knorr, has there been a problem in the past, or have there been any complaints? Because I guess I'm not familiar with why we're bringing this thing forward if there haven't been complaints out there.
Through the chair, Senator Olson, as to my knowledge, there has not been an issue, but we are also moving forward into an age where more and more portable electronics are becoming, they're cheaper, they're more available, and so there is a high probability that this could become a problem in the near future.
Mr. Chairman, if I could continue, as you look at a problem that apparently doesn't exist, why are we trying to get a fix for it, especially when we get into the future, technology is going to be changing, and I would assume that the less than reputable dealers out there are going to find ways to go ahead and work around it, and we have a law that doesn't exactly address the issue that's going to be happening here in 5 or 10 years.
Please identify yourself for the
record. Chairman, Reneva Moss, staffer, Senator Coghill. Through the chair, Senator Olson, I actually asked Carr that question yesterday because I had the same. I am not, and Senator Coghill is not, a person who introduces unnecessary legislation. But we have been convinced that this is creating a new industry in the insurance world, and it needs to be regulated. Consumers have to have protection as far as knowing what they're paying for. And in this market, they need to know if they are getting coverage with their product or if they are paying for a separate coverage of insurance. And because of the nuances of this industry, Senator Coghill felt that it was justified to try to regulate this industry. This is why he introduced the bill.
If I could continue on with that, Senator Machicki talked about a number of 44 states or whatever it was that are out there have already have this kind of legislation in place. Have they been overrun by complaints such as this, or where the consumer has not been adequately protected by some of these industry type of moguls that are out there?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I have not got a response. I have asked those questions but have not got a response yet. My guess is that it could create a whole new market of people selling insurance. And if it does, these statutes will make sure that it's above board and it protects the consumer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, Senator Machicki?
No, I mean, just to clarify for the public, I think you buy your new, you know, $450 iPad or your $300 iPhone or whatever brand you happen to favor, and you close it in the car door, for a relatively low price per year that you would probably buy when you purchase the phone or the device, you'd be adequately covered. And I think that's probably why it's gotten so popular in states with much larger populations. I'd certainly be interested in the product when you have a pile of kids like I do. Replacing some of those objects can be expensive. So,
question. So it doesn't appear to be an issue now, but is the idea that you're preparing for what's going to be an eventuality and you want to get ahead of the curve? And evidence down south, does that seem to indicate that that's why those states have also instituted such a regulation or law?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy. Yes, that is sort of the intent, especially because, I mean, we see technologies advancing at a faster, more rapid rate over the next few years. And while, previously iPods were upwards of $200-$300, and now you can get one for less than $100. And so the idea is that we as a consumer will buy these products, invest in these products, and we want to make the most out of these products. And so that's what we're aiming to do in terms of preemptively creating this legislation so that down the line the consumers are protected.
Okay. Any additional questions for members of the committee? Senator Olson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And who's opposing this bill? Or, I guess more specific, what do the insurance companies think of a bill like this?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, to my knowledge, we have not any opposition that we've received. We have discussed with the corporations and worked to fit in their needs. So at this time, I'm not aware of any current opposition to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any additional?
Mr. Chair, just briefly to respond to Senator Olson's question, there is at least one section in here that the sellers, the vendors of the insurance, would like to see cleaned up because it requires them to do bookkeeping that they don't really want to do. It's an added expense to their business. If you look at page 6, line 10 through 16, this was language that they objected to that we had put in here because the Division of Insurance would like some way to regulate, put a little teeth in it. However, the Director of Division of Insurance will testify to this himself, but we did get a message from him today that he has no problem with this language being removed from the bill. Also, there was a call from Apple Company on page 2, lines 7 through 9, which addresses power surges, which I'm a little reluctant at this point to bring that point up without further clarification from them because they are trying to delete language that is not new language to the statutes. This is an existing language in the statutes for service contracts. We're not dealing with service contracts here. We're dealing with a new portable device insurance. So I'll leave that to the discretion of the committee as to what they want to do with it. But those are the two areas that have been brought to our attention.
Thank you. Any questions, additional questions from members of the committee for folks testifying? Seeing none, thank you. Is Brett Cole here?
Yes.
Please come forward, state your name for the record, and if you have testimony, do so at this point, and if we have questions, we'll begin asking them.
For the record, my name is Brett Kolb. I'm the director of the Division of Insurance. As far as testimony, we don't really have any at this point. I was more available for questions.
Are there questions from members of the committee for Mr. Kolb? Senator Olson.
Is the department in favor of the bill?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the department is supportive of this bill.
Okay, thank you.
Do you see any issues with the bill?
Mr. Chairman, as was mentioned in the previous testimony, the only section that there had been a question about was the page 6, section 3, and as was mentioned, I'm fine with that section being removed. I feel the authority that the division has is sufficient to provide the protections necessary, and that would be redundant to put that in again.
Okay. Any questions, additional questions for members of the committee, for Mr. Cole? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
At this point, I'd like to remove my objection for the CS. And if there is no objection, I'd like to hold this over for the next hearing, in which we'll have public testimony, and we can ask additional questions. Okay, great. So let's just take a quick one-minute transition here. Recess. At this point, we're going to move to SB 55. It's sponsored by State Labor and Commerce Committee. It's an act relating to actions by insurers based on credit history or insurance scores. Before us, we have Mr. Ritchie. He's the committee aide who will present the bill. We also have several members from the industry to answer any technical questions on the bill. This bill also will be held over for the next meeting. So right now, we'll get to understand the bill. We'll hear the bill, ask questions, and we will have one online invited testimony, individual testifying, actually two, Cindy Smith and Alex Hagley, and we'll do that a little later here during the presentation. So at this point, Mr. Ritchie, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Steve Ritchie. I'm staff to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to provide the committee with a very high-level overview, walk through the sectional analysis, and then turn it over to some gentlemen in the room that may be able to speak to the details and impacts on the industry.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Senate Bill 55 makes some minor alterations to current statute, which would allow insurers to use credit scores at the time of renewal. Currently, insurers are allowed to use credit scores during the initial issuance of a policy, but are prohibited from doing that at the time of renewal. That is Section 1 of the bill. Section 2 deletes language from the definition of adverse action. Adverse action notification: if a consumer is not receiving the best rate possible, it is required that notification be given to these consumers. What this bill would allow, would change the statute to allow notification to only, or require notification to be sent only to individuals that are negatively impacted by use of their credit score. It very well could be the case that you are benefiting from a credit score being used, but if you are not receiving the best rate possible, then you'd still be given notice that you are not receiving the best rate possible. So this would just change it if you were only if you were negatively impacted, and that's really the gist of the bill. The bill has a zero fiscal note, and there are some gentlemen here that can speak to some of the impacts to the industry itself and some of the details.
Are there questions for Mr. Ritchie? There are folks that will come up and be able to speak more to the salient issues within the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Ritchie. I guess I'm not an insurance person, but why would you be using credit scores to try and figure out what our insurance rates are going to be?
I will address this briefly, and then maybe Mr. Bryan could speak to it more detailed. Credit scores are one tool that can be used to achieve what the industry refers to as an insurance score. So it's one piece of the matrix that helps insurance companies assess risk, and there has been a number of studies that have shown insurance scores as a good predictor of loss. So it's just an additional tool that insurance companies can use to provide the best rates possible to the Alaskan consumer.
I can continue, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Aren't there other predictors out there that are more reliable that you can predict loss with as opposed to a credit score?
I'm not certain as to what would be more, but credit score would only be one tool that would be used. Mm-hmm. You know, certainly experience, history with an individual, age, sex, things of that nature all go into those insurance scores. So I don't know if there would be something that would be better, but this is certainly a good tool.
And you made a comment under Section 1 that it was prohibited. Why is it prohibited? Using a credit score to figure out what the rates are.
It's only prohibited on a renewal at this time.
Okay.
And that was based on a Supreme Court decision in 2007.
Okay. One other question, it has to do with what if somebody doesn't have a credit score?
That Mr. O'Brien would have to address and to understand the impacts of lack of credit on the consumer.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions, Senator Machicki, for Mr. Ritchie?
No. Is it just because of the law that it was the current law that it was found to be?
I think some of the other folks could be really fill in the details. Is my understanding.
Okay. I'm happy to wait. But okay. It is a pertinent question.
Right. No, sure. I agree. Okay, thank you, Mr. Ritchie. Do we have a Kenton Brine in the audience? Please come forward and state your name for the record. And might as well bring up, we've got enough seats up here. How about Gary Stranigan and Elizabeth Macheri? Please come forward. State your name for the record. Please tell us who you're with. And then if there's one or all of you that wish to give testimony, please do so, and then we'll commence with the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kenton Brine. I'm the Assistant Vice President and Northwest Regional Manager for the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. We're a national trade association representing roughly 38% of the home and auto insurance policies sold and maintained in the state of Alaska and across the country as well. We have in our association insurance writers who write across the entire country. We have some that write regionally, some that write in one state only. So we have a real variety of carriers that have a wide experience with the use of credit information. And I'll try to answer some of the questions. I'll go through the testimony that I prepared, but I think some of the questions you'll find will be answered in that. And then, of course, happy to answer any other specific questions. And I'll just mention that on the line with us is Alex Hagley. He's our director for personal lines, and he is a genuine credit scoring expert and not just pretending to be one for today. So for more than 10 years in Alaska, Alaska's had a very unique statute that, as Stephen pointed out earlier, like 47 other states, it allows insurance companies to look at credit history when it is reviewing an application for a new insurance policy. However, unlike any other state in the country, it requires also that we not consider that credit information when that policy renews. And after 2 years, Alaska statute has been interpreted to require that we remove credit information from the rating underwriting that we've done on that policyholder and re-rate them, rewrite them and re-rate them. And that is unlike any other state in the country. The reasoning behind this kind of goes to Senator Olson's question, is that the law was written in a way that could be interpreted a couple of ways. Insurers, and I know that Elizabeth was here at the time that that bill was being negotiated and discussed and considered here in Alaska, but insurers recall that it was the legislature's intent to allow the use of credit both for new business and at renewal. However, the insurance department's interpretation was, and a lot of legislators' interpretation was, that after 2 years that information should be removed because the insurer would know that policyholder well enough to have other rating criteria that they could use to take the place of credit. And the bill was passed at a time when there was still a great deal of concern, misunderstanding about how credit information is used and whether it had any connection to the risk of loss that an insured might present. Insurers challenged the law in 2006, and in 2006 or 7, I believe it was, a district court agreed with the insurance industry's position. However, it went to the Appeal Court of Appeals and then to the state Supreme Court, which overturned that decision, and we have the interpretation that we have still in place today.
Can I interject? If there's any questions at this stage, just let me know, and Senators, you can ask them, or we can continue. Okay, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what has the effect of this statute been? For many consumers, the effect has been rate increases. For homeowners insurance, auto insurance, boat insurance, RV insurance, all kinds of personal lines policies that people purchase, not for commercial business purposes, but for their own home, auto, et cetera, and not also health insurance, life or disability insurance.
I have a question. Is it the result has been rate insurance? Is that because you're averaging what would be considered high risk with low risk, and you average that out to?
Well, quite specifically, Mr. Chair, not to interrupt, but it is, and these folks with me who are with individual companies can speak more directly, I think, to this and their experience. But it has to do with, I'm going to get to this a little bit more in detail in my testimony, but it has to do with how insurers use credit information. I think there's a myth about how credit information is used. It's used generally to provide discounts to people who are considered to be the best risks. And there is a correlation. Gary and I were talking earlier, and each of us promised to bring our thumb drive, and neither one of us did it. But imagine, if you will, I was holding a thumb drive. It would be very compelling. In that thumb drive, I have 25 studies that have been conducted by insurance departments, state insurance departments, the Federal Trade Commission, insurance organizations and think tanks, all kinds of credible organizations that have done study after study about credit scoring, the use of credit information in insurance scores. All of them conclude the same thing, that there is a strong correlation between a person's financial history, how they manage their personal financial affairs, and their risk of filing claims with their insurance company. Again, it's been proven time and time again. I have all that data and would be happy to provide those thumb drives to anyone who wants to see them. It's a lot of reading, but if I printed them out, it would be a pretty tall stack. But every one of them comes to the same conclusion about that. So we look at credit scores because we want to price products as accurately as we can to match them up with the people and the risks they represent. And in most cases, most consumers have good enough credit that they're either going to not be affected at all by their credit score, or they're going to actually pay less for insurance because they're going to represent a better risk than they would if we didn't use it. And that goes back to what I was saying a moment ago about what the effect has been. When you take away the good credit discount, because most consumers benefit from the use of credit, when you take it away, that means you're taking away a discount, and the cost of insurance for those people goes up. Now, are there people who benefit from that? Yes. The people who are supposed to pay more because they're a higher risk get to pay less, and they're being subsidized by people who have to pay more. And so one of the side results of that is somebody gets an adverse action notice or finds out that their rate is going up 10 to 15 to 20%. They complain to their insurance agent, or they sign up online for a new policy with another company. That creates a lot of churn and disruption in the marketplace. And other discounts that they might have qualified for because they had multiple types of policies with the same insurer, or they had a certain longevity with an insurer, all those things go away because they're now out on the market looking for a new policy with a new company. Now, that kind of gets me a little mixed around in my testimony, but that's the gist of why, that's the gist of the effect out in the marketplace.
Let me excuse you just for a moment.
Yes.
Let the record show that Senator Stedman arrived at 2 p.m. Continue, please.
A study conducted by PCI, a survey that we did of carriers writing in Alaska, we put this together in, I believe, late 2009, and it was at the request of former insurance director Linda Hall. She said, you know, prove to me what you're talking about, that rates are, because we had provided anecdotal information to the director about the effect of the statute. So we did a survey of companies writing in Alaska, and we found that of those companies reporting, which represented a little more than half the market in Alaska at the time, 40% of personal auto policies and 30% of homeowners insurance policy holders saw rate increases of between 11% and 20% as a direct result of losing that good credit discount. And the most significant increases went to over 20% went to about a quarter of the auto insurance policyholders and about 40% of the homeowners policyholders. For no other purpose other than the fact that the statute requires the removal of credit information and the re-rating of the consumer at renewal. I think to go back to what we talked about a few moments ago, the Alaska experience, as I like to refer to it, demonstrates the difference, I think, between the myths and the realities of credit scoring, what people think it does versus what it actually does. You know, there's the myths include that credit has nothing to do with how a person drives or whether or not their house is going to catch fire. I think it's kind of a point that you were making. But again, study after study shows that there is a direct correlation between these things. And if you think about it, although intrinsically it doesn't immediately make sense, it does make some sense if you think about how people manage their financial responsibility. Certainly there are times when things happen to a person that are beyond their control, but those are not the normal thing that happens in people's lives. The normal thing that happens in people's lives is that you establish a pattern with how you live your life. The science of why all that comes together, I could not possibly say, and I'm not sure anybody's developed a study that says it, but it exists nonetheless.
Yes. Senator Machicki.
So again, was it stripped out when the Alaska Division of Insurance sued Progressive in 07? Was it stripped out because of a constitutional issue or because of a statutory issue?
I believe that the court ruled that the statute's language required that credit not be used and that it be removed. The specific reference to 2 years is not in the statute, nor is it in, I don't recall how it was addressed by the court. Sorry?
No, you're correct.
Okay. It was not addressed by the court either. It was in an insurance department, either a regulation or a bulletin, and simply has just been abided by the industry, even though we're not sure that it needed to be there. But it's how the industry has responded based on the department's interpretation.
Questions from members of the committee at this point? Please continue.
Well, let me skip ahead then to kind of what we know based on what I've told you so far, or what we believe we know, and then what the bill actually does. What I've tried to summarize for you here today is that insurers' use of credit information does help most consumers save at least some money on their home and auto insurance in Alaska, and it prevents good risks from paying more to subsidize higher risks who are paying less. That's cross-subsidization, and we don't believe that's fair. The Alaska statute has been costing Alaska consumers money. We've been able to demonstrate that through our own survey. I think the carriers who are with us today, both on the phone and here in the room, can verify that that is still going on, even though our data is a few years old. And insurers are discouraged from entering the Alaska market because this is such a unique state where a tool that is used across the country cannot be used here consistently over time. And those that do right here probably don't offer all the same products and price points and policy options that they offer in other states because it's difficult to get those filings approved under the current state of the statute. And it's difficult to put all that effort into a filing and then get policies signed up for that and then have to change them after 2 years. So what does Senate Bill 55 do specifically? Well, first and foremost, here's what it doesn't do. It doesn't change any of the existing safeguards that are already in the statute. The absence of credit history cannot be considered. Insurance quotes or inquiries that a person makes, which in other circumstances, in a lending circumstance, for example, might affect your credit score, cannot be considered in an insurance score. Credit checks by the consumer when they check their own credit cannot be considered by an insurer. There are others as well that are in the statute and remain unchanged by the amendments that we propose. What it does do is clarify the statute by allowing insurers to continue to consider credit information at renewal. And then secondly, or thirdly perhaps, depending on how you look at it, it clarifies the adverse action notice provisions of the statute. Stephen mentioned this as well. One of the problems with credit scoring as it currently exists is that under the current statute, and it's this way in a couple of other states as well, if you have a good credit score, but you don't have the very highest credit score, and you apply for insurance, and the insurance rate you get isn't the very best rate available, then we have to send you an adverse action notice saying that you didn't get the very best rate because of your credit. Now, what does that say to you as a consumer? I have great credit, and this company is treating me badly, even though I have great credit. Well, the fact is that because they used your great credit, you're probably saving money. You're almost certainly saving money over what your policy would have cost you if we didn't use credit. But maybe your credit isn't quite good enough, or maybe there are other factors in your record, because insurers often combine credit scores with other insurance factors to determine your insurance score. So there might have been some factor not related to credit that meant you didn't get the very best rate. We don't get to put all that in the adverse action notice. You just get a form letter that says your credit caused you to not get the very best rate. We propose
Senator Chicken.
Oh, go ahead. I will wait until the end of the testimony.
Then this is really it. Okay. This would propose that the language of the statute require us to send an adverse action notice when the rate you're receiving is not as good as the rate you would have received if we didn't look at your credit. So it becomes a truthful statement about your credit in terms of your insurance rate, and that's what we propose.
Okay, before we ask questions, can we have the other folks identify themselves for the record and who they're with, and that way if they need to answer.
Mm-hmm. Hi, for the record, Elizabeth Mulseri. I'm with Allstate Insurance Company. I'm the Director for State and Legislative Affairs for Alaska.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Gary Stranigan from Liberty Mutual and Safeco Insurance Company is based out of Seattle. Primarily a personal lines writer, Safeco, and I'll pick up my remarks a little later on, though. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any questions at this point for Mr. Bryan or members of the committee? Member Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some of the questions that I had were already talked about, but what happens if somebody takes a dump in their credit score for no one reason, act of God or whatever else that goes on out there? Why should they're not necessarily a different person than they were a year before or 2 years before, whenever the renewal was coming up. How do you compensate, or how do you make sure that that's not the that doesn't adversely affect someone's trying to get a renewal?
This may be a question that can be better answered by the individual companies that are here. Because I represent a trade association, it's hard for me to say how any individual company would respond to that situation.
Sure.
But I can say, based on what I have been told in answer to that very question, mm-hmm. companies are still, these are their customers. They're not looking for ways to chase them off to other insurers. And again, I think it's important to keep in mind that an insurance score is almost always a combination of credit and other factors. There are times when your credit might help you pay a better rate. There are other times when other factors in your insurance score might help you pay a better rate. And I think insurers are, by and large, this is a law of large numbers industry. People will say, you know, you don't know if because my credit score is bad that I'm going to crash my car. No, we don't. We also don't know if you're 17 that you're going to go crash your car. But statistically, odds are you're going to go crash your car. So we have to rate policies based on that, based on the probability of certain things happening. Someone having an anomaly in their credit score probably doesn't mean they're going to instantly pay a higher insurance rate. But if they're in a group of people who suffered similar anomalies at the same time, then yes, they might end up. Because suddenly we've got a statistical group of people that we have to look at as to whether their behavior is changing.
So, for example, if somebody's in the stock market takes a plunge like it did in 2008, credit scores go down, and a lot of people were affected by that, how do you compensate for that? I mean, the person themselves, the integrity of the person, their driving habits haven't changed.
If I may be allowed to answer through the chair, Senator Olson, we do not use, we don't rerun your credit on renewal. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the confusion that was originally part of this bill, and that when I was here, when it was, when there was a lot of negotiations and testimony. But we don't re-access your credit information. What companies do is they use part of the credit and other factors to create a, we don't use a credit score, we use credit factors. Mm-hmm. And that puts a person to a tier. So when we renew folks, they're in a tier. They're in that tier because of that underlying credit-based information, but we don't rerun the credit. As you pointed out, things do change with people's lives, but we don't rerun the credit, and this bill would not allow us to rerun credit. It would just allow us to keep the existing discount that our customers have. And this does impact 60% of our customers have been impacted by this. It's been a very expensive endeavor for us. We had to create three different insurance companies. So when we renew our customers, in our auto book, we had to put half of the group in one company and half in the other. With the good drivers, with the credit discount, their rate's going up 20%. And our homeowners, again, 60% of our customers get rate increases when they get renewed, which, as Kenton mentioned, it causes a lot of disruption in the marketplace with our customers who may walk with their get their bill, be upset with their agent, and go across the street, and they lose their multi-policy discount. And we're the number two insurer on homeowners, number three on auto. You know, the Division Insurance, their budget report to the legislature mentioned there's a lack of competitive marketplace. And I think this is one of the reasons. Alaska's low population, bad weather, and you have to ship all the parts to repair cars and replace homes. It's not an attractive place for insurers to do business. And then on top of this kind of very unique interpretation of what running credit on renewal means, it's not been an attractive marketplace for insurers.
Senator Machicki.
Yeah, I'm just on the last information you gave us, and I expected that Allstate voice to come out of you, and it didn't, so thanks for that. where in the bill does it, it would make me more comfortable if you didn't rerun credit information, and I have some, let me say this, I'm the furthest from a bleeding heart you're going to find, but young people don't put the same emphasis on a credit history as those once they get established. So I have two questions. One is, where in the bill does it discuss you not rerunning the credit for a renewal?
It doesn't mention anything in the bill that allows an insurer to rerun credit.
Does it discourage you from running a fresh credit report?
We can't rerun credit. We can't rerun your credit check when it comes up for renewal. What companies do now is they have to strip it out, the credit information. And now if this law was amended and changed and to fix the Supreme Court decision, it when carriers renew, they would just keep their customers in their same tiers. They would not be rerunning or going through any algorithm. They would be keeping the customers in their same tiers, which is how a lot of carriers do it or not.
Okay, and I have a follow-up.
Mm-hmm. But I can't point it out to you since it's not a, it doesn't say we can't do it. It doesn't say we can do it. We do not rerun credit on renewal.
Okay.
Senator Machicki, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the Senator Olson had a good point on that concern. But my other is you have young family getting their feet on the ground, tough times. Is this going to make it significantly more expensive for them to get insurance for that old beater getting back and forth to a job they desperately need?
Please identify yourself again for the record when you speak.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Gary Strandigan from Safeco and Liberty Mutual Insurance Companies. And through the chair, Senator Olson, Senator Machicki, it's counterintuitive, but since 2008, credit scores have gradually improved broadly on an average basis across the country. And it's because people have retrenched. And you saw consumer spending go down, and people were steadily paying down their debts. And that was good for them. And that's good for young families when they get going. Credit scores can be counterintuitive, as I mentioned. And that can apply to the young family getting started or the double-income, no-kid yuppies in the suburbs who spend gobs of dough and go on fancy vacations. They could have trouble with their credit scores. So that could be reflected in their insurance. And it's funny that there is a correlation. All these studies support that credit is an accurate predictor of risk. Why that is odd. All I can surmise from my 10 years looking at this and dealing with it is that people don't, as Kenton was kind of getting at, people don't partition off the responsible portions of their life. They don't say, I'm going to be responsible with my finances, but I'm going to let my roof rot and rain fall into my house. Or up here, snow, I guess. I'm going to keep good tires on my car. I'm going to keep the brakes under good repair. Those are things that people that have good credit often do. So that's my surmisation, to coin a word, as to why it is an accurate predictor, why it actually works. For my brief statement, I would like to give you just a few numbers. 72, 76, 80, and 4. 72 is the percentage of our auto insurance customers here in the state of Alaska right now, our being Safeco Insurance Company, that receive either a positive treatment or neutral treatment from the credit being included. That is, they get increased rates when we strip it out. 76 is the case for our homeowners' book of business in the state. They receive increases or are neutrally treated when we strip out the credit information. Now, ironically, and this is why the adverse action piece of this bill is so important, 80% to 85%, roughly, of our customers receive an adverse action notice. How can that be when 76% of our homeowners' book are receiving favorable treatment directly related to their credit information? Well, it's because they didn't get the very best price that Safeco offers. And so it's essentially a misleading document, that adverse action notice, to 76, to the ones that get it, that have a favorable treatment. And so by promulgating this misleading information, you're creating angst in the marketplace. People get upset. They call their agents and they complain. Sometimes they call the insurance department and complain. Sometimes they call us and complain. And it might not have anything. They might have absolutely the very top score, but maybe they had other attributes, other factors, accidents or tickets or whatever that aren't masked, that drove their rate down a little bit. So the adverse action piece is an important one. And finally, 4. Elizabeth mentioned some of the competitive aspects. Alaska is a very remote state. Most of the insurance companies are headquartered on the East Coast. Safeco is still based out of Seattle. So it's very remote, number one. Number two, it's a small market. There's not a lot of premium to be had up here. And finally, there are these unique aspects of Florida statute that are divergent from the rest of the country, and they cost money. Safeco just got approved through the Insurance Department of Filing for our auto product in the fall. It cost us, the number was $1.2 million just in IT expenses to get that filing approved. That's on a per premium dollar basis, that's 4 times the second most costly state in the country. Let that sink in a little. 4 times the second most costly, not 4 times the average, 4 times number 2. On a per premium dollar basis, so that's a barrier to competition, and if you believe in markets, I think that should get your attention. This measure would go a long ways to dropping barriers to entry into the marketplace, enhancing competition for the business of your constituents, and so I commend the bill to you.
Thank you. Questions?
I did fail. Pardon me, Mr. Chair. I did fail to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for the sponsorship of this bill. We're really grateful. It's an important piece of legislation.
Thank you. Members of the committee, questions? Member Michicki, then Member Olson.
Well, it didn't completely answer my question, although it was a great answer. Still concerned, are there products, reasonably priced products, available for those that will not have a credit, positive credit history, but are doing their best to, and I'm not talking about a charity case here, I'm talking about folks that are legitimately doing their best, lower income folks. Will this create, because you are now able to separate the two, will it create a market that's very expensive compared to what they're currently paying for those same services?
Through the chair, Senator, I think one way to answer the question from an industry-wide standpoint is I think every market has price points. I think that, as Mr. Stranigan has pointed out, making it easier for carriers to write insurance here is the biggest single thing that you could do to help the families that are on the edge that are having a difficult time, because if you have more carriers and more price points and more products, you're going to have more opportunities for people to shop around and get insurance at the rate that's affordable for them. Secondly, I need to restate that the statute, while it does have impact, is merely allowing something to continue that's already in place for new policies. So if you're a person who is in a certain place today, it wouldn't necessarily change your position. I suppose that because there is some shift as discounts are maintained and not swapped over and lost, in other words, then that might have some impact on people at the other end of the credit score scale. But again, I think then I need to balance that with the information that who are we hurting now? We're hurting large numbers of consumers who are losing discounts that they have earned and lowering rates for people who, because of their in some cases because of personal financial history, et cetera, are going to pay less. So, again, this isn't intended to be an indictment of people whose credit scores are bad and people who have good credit scores are better people. The point is that, as I mentioned earlier, we have to deal with probability and statistics. And our goal is to tie these rates as closely as we possibly can to anticipated behavior. And we have to find the best tools to do that. The information that we have suggests that credit information is among the strongest predictors of risk of loss that are available. I think Senator Olson asked the question earlier, is this more accurate than other factors? Are there other factors that are accurate? There are insurers who will tell you that the credit score is the most predictive factor that they have, the most predictive factor.
Yeah. Go ahead, Senator Machicki.
Quick follow-up. So the answer is yes, and I appreciate that. An easier answer would have been yes. You have to shift. You have to shift. Right now you're averaging, and you will no longer be averaging. So the law of basic economics is you're going to shift more of the expense to lower income folks that aren't going to.
I'm sorry, Senator, through the chair. Not to lower income people. There is not a correlation between low income scores and low incomes and lower credit scores.
Lower credit scoring people, I believe, is what I said. And that's just important to understand that we may have to be aware that insurance costs could go up for those that are having a difficult time maintaining their credit scores.
Senator Olson.
What happens if somebody pays cash for everything and doesn't have a credit history and they're trying to get some insurance out there? How do you go ahead and adjust for that? Or especially out in rural Alaska where you don't have, things are pretty much cash.
Please identify yourself again.
For the record, Elizabeth Mulseri, Allstate Insurance Company, through the chair, Senator Olson. If that's a person described as a no-hit under the system and they get a neutral score, so in the band of prices, they're in the middle. They get a neutral score. We have a price for all of our customers, and through the chair, and just to maybe amend a little bit the response that Kenton indicated to you, Senator Bacici. And I hope I pronounce your name right because I'm Italian too, and you know, I don't know what part of Italy you're from. If it's a hard C or a soft C, so
it's Machicki.
Machicki. An insurance score is not based on a credit score. Credit scores are not based on income. It's based on managing what you have, not how much you have.
I understand.
So coming through the door, our customers, we give an insurance score and we put them in a tier. What happens with this law is 60% of our customers, when they renew, lose their credit discount. What about those other 40%? They actually end up paying less because someone has to pay for that loss. So we have to strip out their credit, and we have to strip out the good credit, and that leaves us huge subsidization. So our good drivers are subsidizing the bad drivers or the greater risk. We don't like to say good or bad. It doesn't really sound good. We all have good customers. It's risk. And that's the subsidization. I don't know about you, but I feel that I should pay for what I deserve, not a penny more, not a penny less. And under the system, the way it's now, is our good customers are subsidizing the greater higher risk, and they actually get a rate decrease. So you're thinking, well, wait a minute, the good risks, they're getting a rate increase, they're going to walk across the street. The ones who have a higher risk, they're getting a rate decrease. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to stay. But because that's not rated accurately, that impacts our entire book of business and gives us a higher expense ratio, which then in turn raises everybody's rates.
If I can clarify one.
Yes.
My concern is not, I mean, what will happen is obvious, and I support what will happen. The problem that I'm looking at is we have a huge uninsured motorist problem in the state of Alaska, and we have to be on guard that we don't encourage that number to increase. Alaska is one of those states. We're number one in a lot of areas that we're not very proud of. That's one of those areas. So that's my primary concern. So if there may need to be another, and I don't know if there's an SR-22 program in the state of Alaska or something like that, but that's the kind of product that may be a stripped, barren insurance policy for those that no longer can make it because of their credit score and their insurance score and the combination of those items. That's my only reason for bringing it up. Not that you're doing anything wrong. I support those of us with great credit scores and great driving records paying less for insurance.
Elizabeth Mulcair with Allstate through the chair. Senator Machiki, I'm going to get it right. My name's constantly mispronounced. Alaska has an assigned market for auto policies. There's an assigned risk pool for folks who do not qualify for insurance that is subsidized by the insurance industry. So we do have that in Alaska. We're concerned also about the number of uninsured drivers. We feel that to make insurance available and affordable is the number one, that's the number one factor in getting that goal, like getting that number down. We feel in the industry that to make Alaska a better marketplace for carriers is to make it more attractive by not having Supreme Court decisions that are out of line with the rest of the country, that you have a regulatory system such as use and file that would make for ease of filings, and to have regulatory modernization in the state, because that's really what makes Alaska unique. You have Rule 82 attorney's fees and $1 million in UIM limits. Those are very unique to Alaska. Maybe not a bad thing, but that's when carriers look at, I have to make a filing, I have to do all this stuff in the state, it's not attractive for a carrier to come into the marketplace. We don't like being one of the few homeowner writers in the state. We welcome competition because everybody benefits from that. And I think with Director Kolb, I think we're having a lot of very good discussions in improving filing approvals with the department, and I think that will sincerely help. And I think passing this law, changing the Supreme Court decision, which has been devastating to our customers and very expensive to carriers, I think you're going to find more carriers coming into the marketplace.
Questions?
I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much. We have, do we still have Cindy Smith on the phone?
Yes, I am here. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Cindy, and committee members. My name is Cindy Smith, and I'm senior counsel at GEICO. GEICO is your second largest writer of personal auto insurance. GEICO supports this proposed modification and clarification, and to allow the credit be used at renewal without the requirement that it be taken out. You've heard that the current requirements result in some policies receiving a higher rate and some undeservedly receiving a lower rate, even though there's no additional surchargeable activity that has occurred or any information that's changed. That result, GEICO feels, is so fundamentally unfair that GEICO doesn't use credit at the current time, even though if it were allowed to, most consumers would benefit from its use. Additionally, the requirement that the waiver be in writing, it creates burdensome systems and tracking requirements for insurers. So GEICO supports the passage of this bill and respectfully requests the committee to pass the bill. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify and specifically for the opportunity to testify by phone. And I'm also happy to answer any GEICO-specific questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Smith? Seeing none, thank you. Is there a we had Brett Holt up before with the Division of Insurance. Do we need to bring him up for any questions for members of the committee? Okay. And Alex Hagel is available for questions as well. Would we like to bring Alex up? Alex is with PCI. Is that correct?
That is correct. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Alex Hagley, and with Kenton Bryan, I represent PCI. I only had two comments to make. Number one is to just emphasize that the use of credit information at renewal is not prohibited under Alaska law. It simply requires that policyholders be the one to ask the insurance company to use credit information at renewal, and it's a rare policyholder indeed who knows, one, that credit information is used, and two, that their state law requires them to call their insurance company up and request a rescore. Number two, and so that's, this change in the law would eliminate that and allow, as you heard other people testify, consumers to continue to benefit from the use of credit information. Number two, and I forget the name of the senator who raised this question, the question about a young family who credit is used and then their credit score goes down because of unforeseen circumstances. There are a number of insurance companies, and I dare say it's even the majority of insurance companies, who when they do a rescore, if that score is lower, they'll disregard that rescore and simply keep the original score. Because as my colleague testified earlier, companies aren't looking to chase away consumers, they're looking to keep them. And they'll do what they can to keep them. And those were my only comments.
Any questions? Seeing none, this bill is going to be held over for next committee. Just a quick statement. The reason I brought this bill forward was to hear the testimony, be able to ask the questions, because there was an understanding that I had that you have a situation where there are some paying for some paying a higher rate for insurance that may be subsidizing others. Was this good public policy? Was this good for the people of Alaska? I do have one quick question, though. So is this partially what's responsible, for example, for, let's say, someone like myself that may have decent credit, going shopping for insurance to get a lower rate, even though I may be with an outfit for a while, that you would tend to think that if you're with them for a while, your credit and your risk history, et cetera, would be pretty good, but I can go to another and just shop every now and then and will continually, as you say, churn the market? Okay. Any additional questions or comments before we end the meeting? Once again, this will be held over. We'll have ability of the for the public to comment on this bill as well as the previous bill, which was 52, SB 52. This is SB 55.
Mr. Chairman, may I make one final comment?
You don't really have to, but if you insist.
Thank you. With the line of questioning that Senator Machiki had, I thought it might be useful just to touch upon briefly the Oregon initiative experience. In 2007, I believe it was, there was an initiative to the public advanced in the state of Oregon that would have banned insurers' use of credit for both homeowners and auto. And at the outset of that effort, 75% of the voters in Oregon wanted to approve that ban. When we communicated with the voters that about this subsidization, that people with good credit would be subsidizing in the credit ban world, those with bad credit, they got it, and the vote flipped, and we defeated that initiative with, I think it was about a 68% no vote, almost turned the numbers right on their heads, because people understand that if I'm responsible here, then I'm going to be rewarded over here.
And it creates a positive incentive in the marketplace. So it's I think, good, and for that reason, it's good public policy.
Questions? Seeing none, meeting's adjourned.